and gents, thank you for tuning in. I'm Henrik, this is Red Ice Radio. It's good to be back with you after some travel, some hiatus, you know, taking care of a few personal things. Took a bit longer than expected. Anyway, we are very glad to be back with you. We are going to be doing some live TV coverage of the elections in Holland next week. This is next Wednesday, the 15th, so definitely make sure you tune into the website at that point. We're going to have some exciting live coverage following the elections, seeing what's happening and following the different parties. And today we actually have a brief update for you, if you will, on that. Kind of a primer, just set the stage a bit and actually go through and talk about, you know, some of the parties, what we're looking at, some of the different agendas, if you will, that they have. So we have with us Michael and Boss from Erik & Brandt, the Dutch, well, alt-right group, if you will. So it's good to have you guys with us. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Good evening, Henrik.
Very good. It's good to speak with you guys again. Hope everything been going well. I think you guys had some media coverage last time. We just briefly spoke about this before we came on here, but you got some new members from it. Things have been going well after that point. It didn't really develop into a shitstorm, as they say, right?
No, it was quite tame, I think. I heard some people on Twitter that were retweeting it, but not that much. And I also think it helps because the main article was behind the paywall, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they had a small article that was just an introduction and a larger one, which was behind the paywall. So most people probably only read their introduction, which was pretty good coverage for us. So I guess many people didn't really get triggered enough, I should say.
Yeah, insofar as we really got anything out of it, in a negative sense, it is because we are now on notice with opponents like the so-called Antifa, and so whereas before we were relatively unknown, we could under the radar. Yeah, that doesn't fly anymore. So we have to take precautions even more so now than before.
What were some of their concerns in the article? Did they write any specific? Usually, I've noticed when they write about you know, similar groups in other countries, they kind of, first of all, they get most of it wrong, and they kind of apply an interpretation which is just inaccurate. How was this coverage? Any different?
Well, there were some things that were that she did get right, but other things that she didn't. So it was a kind of a mixed bag, and of course they made a big point out of the fact that some people mentioned that they were afraid of civil war, or they thought that maybe it would end up like that. Some people said they were doing training for them, like for fighting training, for kind of things like that. So they made a big issue out of that, like, oh, these people are preparing for civil war.
Right.
Well, it was probably, yeah, they interviewed some people, but it's probably not a very big issue that they mentioned, but they just blew it up, of course, to make it more exciting.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like they want to prop it up more than it actually is. But whatever, that's good. You know, that's good for from our part, to be honest.
Yeah, they did have a few good points in the article about returning to more traditional values and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty happy with the article.
Yes, I was just about to say, like, for someone who was completely out of the loop of this, like, the journalist who wrote this article, she basically had never heard of this whole movement, and so she got in like with fresh mind, and she tried to make sense out of this whole alt-right thing. She even mentioned Pepe, and I mean that was quite hilarious, even though she didn't really hit the mark. But yeah, she tried to make sense of a new identitarian movement that tries to revive European ethnocentrism in a sense. And the message overall wasn't entirely unsympathetic. So I was outside of the comments about civil war etc. I was pretty satisfied with the article itself.
Oh, good. So some kind of moniker of objectivity. That's actually pretty rare. So that's good when they can give us that.
It was also in the more, I'm not sure you can call it the right-wing paper, but they're more, kind of, yeah, they're not a very explicitly leftist paper. They are liberals, but they usually have more objective articles also about immigration and these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was pretty
good. Yeah, if we had a journalist who was from a newspaper like Volkskrant or like had a, that is explicitly left-wing, then, yeah, we would have been in quite a bit more trouble, I think.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's good. Very good. Okay, so, well, let's talk a bit about the Dutch elections coming up here. Go through a little bit of some of the parties. There is a number of them. We're talking before here. It's almost like mm-hmm. Weimar style. I think you have 28 participating parties overall. Obviously, we don't have to go through all of them because some are just not kind of, I guess, more or less irrelevant. But what should people know about the parties that are running and what they represent for those who are not privy to Dutch the Dutch political system? At this point,
The first thing I need to mention, and I'm not sure if your listeners are familiar with this, but our political system is proportional representation. So, as soon as you have I think it's about 5% of the vote, a bit less even, and as soon as you get enough percentage of the vote that you can get one seat in parliament, then you're just in. So there's no arbitrary limit on how many seats you need to get before you actually get into parliament. So it is relatively easy here to enter parliament, which also means that there are a lot of parties. And because there are so many parties, coalition governments need to be formed. So there is never, like in the United States or in the UK or in France, there is never just one party ruling. It's always a set of parties, usually three. Lately, it can also be four. It really depends on the balance of power in parliament. But in any sense, a coalition government means that no matter how many parties are in it, it will always be not completely in line with the own party platform. So you can have a coalition of classical liberals with social democrats, which is what we have now,
mm-hmm.
Or you can have a coalition of Christian democrats with classical liberals, which is what we had before. That's a bit of the outline of our political system, and I think it's very important that your listeners realize that this is the situation we have to deal with.
So it's like blocks, really, that's developing, and they can put themselves, coalitions can go into opposition against one party. We have a similar thing in Sweden, obviously. They go together, and it's almost appearing like they're all going to gang up against the Sweden Democrats, more or less, in the next election. So it'll be like a two-party system, eventually, you know?
Well, yeah. Our coalitions are actually only formed, not before, but only during the formation period of the government. So they run as individual parties, and only after the election has finished will they form a coalition to form a government.
Yeah, no, it's the same.
Leftist bloc, and there is no right bloc, there's no center bloc. It's just all individual parties, and they can mix as soon as the election is over, basically.
Do you guys know if they could, if it's legal beforehand, say, after, you know, let's keep the Freedom Party out of the parliament, so let's work together.
They do try to say, like, oh, we don't want to work together with this party or that party, or we like to work together with that other party, but usually there's not that much choice because they need a majority in the end as a government, and they need to combine the biggest parties, and then usually they have the two biggest parties, and they add either one or two smaller parties. But in this election, according to the polls, they will probably need 5 or 6 parties to form a government.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be fun. And usually they have to how do you call it? They have to negotiate about what kind of things they want to, like what kind of plan they want to make for as a government.
Yeah.
So the parties have to agree about their program, so to say. And if for this election, I think it will be difficult because a lot of parties have said they don't want to work together with the PVV, the party from Geert Wilders. And he's probably going to be the biggest party. Or maybe the second biggest, if he's unlucky. So it's very likely that he will have to, that he will end up in the government, or at least it will be very difficult to form one without him.
Interesting. So it could be maybe that someone who wants to form a coalition realize that they could work together with them. Is that a possibility, do you guys think, at this point, that he would get in and get some sway over things?
I personally doubt it, because if current polls are correct, he has about 15% of the vote. So you would need at least the two center-right parties. And they have already said, like, no matter what, we don't want it. And an additional factor we have to take into consideration is that even if they would say, like, we will work together with the Wilders, and then there is still the issue of the Senate. And there the balance of power is again different. So I personally doubt that it is a viable option, no matter how big he gets.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that's also why it's interesting, I think, because if they don't want to get him in the government, then they basically have to end up with even more parties.
Right, to so make it could be a mess. It could turn into a mess at the end of it.
I think so.
Yeah. So you guys had said as well that this election cycle had been very mellow. It was not. It hasn't been really high energy, I guess.
No, not really.
Why is that? What's going on?
Well, I think also a lot of people can't be very enthusiastic about the parties, because I mean, there's lots of, especially on the internet, there's lots of people that are enthusiastic about the PVV, the Shared Rails Party, and some of the other right-wing parties. And there's also the Green Left Party, GroenLinks, has grown quite a lot. But that's also probably because the Labour Party has shrunk quite a bit.
Yeah, they've imploded, yeah.
So there are some things going on there, and GroenLinks is, I think, quite... they try to be energetic, but I'm not sure how well they're...
Well, the media is helping them. Like, their leader is a young guy. I think he's 29 years old. And he's also... the kid of a Moroccan father and an Indonesian mother, so he's like the real protege, the new Netherlands. Like that's the kind of image they want to portray. Like, and he stands for inclusivity. And
was it Klaver? Jesse Klaver? Yeah.
Jesse Klaver. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the media is promoting him as the normal alternative for the spooky Geert Wilders, and so you can definitely see that since Labour has dropped, because normally Labour gets a lot of support from traditional media, but since Labour has imploded, which is been going on for over 10 years, but they've really dropped the ball this time around. And basically, the media has more or less said, like, okay, Labour is clearly not going to work anymore. We have to try something else. And then now they're trying to promote this green figure very heavily.
The Labour Party had some split-off parties. I'm not exactly sure what happened internally, but there's not much left from the party. They used to be one of the biggest ones, and I think they now maybe have like less than 10% of the vote or so.
Did they used to be a very powerful party?
They have governed for at least since the Second World War, like maybe 70% of the time in coalition with either the Christian Democrats or the central classical liberals. So basically, our political system after the Second World War was divided between the three main factions, the Christian Democrats, the Social Democrats, and the Classical Liberals. And that has lasted until Pim Fortuyn, who got assassinated in 2001. And after that, basically everything has imploded. The Labour Party has imploded. Christian Democrats have imploded. or well, maybe the imploded is the wrong term. It's just because society as a whole has become more secular. In any case, even the Christian Democrats have lost quite a bit of the vote. Like normally they could get at least 45 seats in parliament, and now they have about 20. Labor, exactly the same, also around 40, 45, and now they have like 15 or 10 even in the polls now. And the classical liberals are doing relatively fine, but still not as good as they used to be. Like the last election, they had 41, if I recall correctly, and they're now polling at around 25. So you can just see that there's a complete fragmentation around in our country.
I heard right somebody now say that like the previous record of the least amount of seats for the biggest party, that was around 35 or so, and currently the biggest party I think is polling less than 30. I think 27. I saw something like that.
It's a big
view.
Yeah. Just one more thing about the Labour Party, which Bas mentioned and which we didn't really explain. Like there was some guys left the Labour Party this last term. They were two Turkish parliamentarians or parliamentarians from Turkish descent, and they have founded their own political party, and while it is not explicitly like Turkish, they do cater to the Turkish ethnic minority and ethnic minorities in general, I would say. So they've been heavily involved with they're flying at mosques, and they want more rights in the sense of protection for religion and all these kinds of issues. So that's an interesting flavor that is now in this election. Like on the one side you have Wilders, who is very anti-Islam and more of the nationalist choice, and now you have the split off from Labour, basically the ethnic minority vote. And their party is called DENK, and they're probably going to enter parliament, and if that happens, then we have real new thing happening here. Like the first instance of ethnic minorities organizing themselves and entering parliament in a European country.
What's also interesting to mention is that as the PVV is very much pro-Israel, and DENK is very much anti-Israel, and there's also a few native Dutch people on the list of DENK, where you can vote for those people in the party. And they're all, you wonder, like, why are they there? Because they're not minorities, but they're all very much also leftist and very much anti-Israel, pro-Palestine. So this is kind of interesting combination that we have pretty much two opposites. One is very pro-Dutch and pro-Israel, and the other one is very pro-minority and pro-anti-Israel.
Yeah, it's like, why even bring in Israel into this? This is about the Dutch future, right?
Yeah, I know. But everybody has to bring up Israel some way, one way or another.
Yeah.
It has always annoyed me.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So, you know, the danger with this, of course, of divvying up the different agendas like this is that everything kind of becomes toothless in a way, and this is, you know, that's why we made the Weimar comparison earlier. It gets into these tiny, small little, you know, really, in a way, they're identitarian, not identitarian, but they're like specific interests of those people, whatever issue that they want to push. For example, there is a party for the animals, right?
there's more of these parties. There's also like a party for people that are 50 years or older. And then there's DENK, which is the minority party, and then there's Article 1, which is the party for like the feminists and also minorities a little bit.
The SDAW kind of things, basically.
And then there's the Pirate Party, which is very much for personal privacy. Security, privacy, and these kind of things. And then you have all kind of yeah, lots of these newer parties are like one, yeah, not really one issue party, but really pushing like one of these things they think is important.
Yeah, the one little issue, whatever they are concerned with, right?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and then no one represents the bigger kind of picture. But in a way, mm-hmm. wouldn't fracturing, I don't know, this is difficult, but wouldn't someone like Wilders maybe benefit from the fracturing that, if all these other parties are kind of breaking off and they have disagreements, the more petty they become about the issues, and let's say the more large Wilders can get about the issues of like the most important question of the future of Holland itself, you think that maybe that would attract more people at the end of it. I don't know.
You would think so. And I also would, that was something I would have, I expected, but according to the polls, and well, I don't know how serious you should take the polls, but according to the polls, he's not really bigger than he used to be. There's more of there's more of these newer parties that get some votes that go from the bigger parties, I think.
Mm-hmm. All right.
He doesn't really show up much.
Yeah, I have also a hard time interpreting the polls, because in one time point they show that Geert Wilders' party that's bigger. And then the next one, they show GroenLinks, the left part, the Green Left Party, that's bigger. And I'm like, how did this happen? Because I can't imagine people going from one to the other.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not sure how accurate they are or what to think of it.
Yeah.
Well, I think at least the takeaway is that with so many new parties, the political landscape is very volatile. That's the very least we can say.
Mm.
I don't believe that we should look at them like, oh, this is going to be the next result of the elections. Like the seats they are polling here, that will be about the amount that they will get. No, I don't think it's that accurate. But at least we can get a sense of some of the movements in our populace, like what preferences people have, even though in the end, they might very well still vote very practical. Like I still have this feeling, this connection with a party I voted for like four times already. Like many old people do this. Like in the end, they will still vote Labour, even though they might like the Green Left more, for example.
Yeah.
So I think we cannot really take the polls that seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very difficult to know, and usually they just sample a very small portion as well of the population, mm-hmm. so it could go either way, you know, unless we get some vote issues, of course, or any kind of fraud or anything like that. It'll be really interesting to see, you know, how this develops and what we're looking at. So do a quick rundown for us, if you can, guys, in terms of the different parties. And obviously we've spoken about some of them already. But which are you guys keeping an eye on? Which are more plausible to end up in a position of power here?
Yeah, like we said before, the Geert Wilders, their PVV is pretty going to be pretty big. I think together with the Classical Liberals. Do you know which one is the third one biggest party, Michael?
The first one is either, according to different polls, either VVD or PVV, so yeah. Either the Classical Liberals or Wilders. And the third one is the Green Left.
Okay, yep.
Mm.
Yeah, and then there are some new parties on the right which are interesting, or can be interesting. Some are more interesting than others. and one of the more interesting ones is the Forum for Democracy. So the Forum for Democracy. It used to be a think tank for, I think, PVV. They tried to come up with policies and such. But now they went into the politics themselves, and they're doing pretty well on the internet, but most of the media is trying to ignore them.
They have a very famous leader.
Yeah, Thierry Baudet, right? Baudet?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he helps push the initiative for the referendum about Ukraine, which was a thing here about a year ago.
What was that about, for those who don't know?
It was basically a referendum about an association treaty the EU wanted to sign with the Ukraine. and it really got its own dynamic here in the Netherlands, because it was more or less connected with the EU as a failing institution, and how they would in the end want to have Ukraine enter the EU and give them visas and all these kinds of issues. Like, and we already have a lot of problems with Romania and Bulgaria, for example. And of course, the migration crisis was still very fresh in people's minds. Like all these issues played a part in the referendum and the end result of a no. That's the Dutch populace didn't want to sign an association treaty with the Ukraine. Another aspect, by the way, was the geopolitical one, like the struggle between the US and Russia in the Ukraine. And a lot of people don't really like the antagonizing position that our government takes vis-a-vis Russia.
Right.
But anyway, yeah. So that was a very important issue, I think, and one of the reasons why he got so famous in the Netherlands, because he played a big part in organizing this whole event.
So it's really the Denk party that you mentioned, though, go back to them for a moment, that's really... some articles I read about them, they're almost saying that they're like a not only just a minority party, they're almost like a Turkish national party. Is this the same one, or is there another one which operates as a Turkish national party?
No, it's this one.
It's that one. Okay.
There's another one, the Artikel 1, which is Article 1 about our constitution. It's also catering to minorities a little bit, but they're also very much feminist, so. That doesn't work too well with many of them.
They'll find a way. They find a way of working together, it seems, right?
Yeah. But it's a really strange combination.
Very.
Most of the minorities are probably not going to vote for them because they don't like the feminist nonsense, basically.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know.
That's funny. It's just breaking apart completely. But, I mean, let's think about that for a moment, though. So, there's like, I mean, would there ever be a party in Turkey pushing Dutch interests? Would that ever happen? You know,
probably not.
No.
Well, to ask the question is basically to give the answer. Like,
yeah,
it's just unfathomable, and especially considering like that they hate Greeks, for example, even though there are still a number of Greeks there, and Armenians and all these kinds of other minorities and Kurds. Just to give a very famous example, like Turkish people hate minorities, but we here are supposed to welcome these Turkish people and have them parade around with Turkish flags and shout Erdogan is this great leader and
insanity.
It is insanity.
It is.
Yeah.
Absolute insanity. What are these people doing? I mean, go back to Turkey then. What are you even pushing for this in Holland? It's amazing.
I can understand their point of view because they are here and they also want some power. So, of course, they're going to eventually end up making their own party and advocating
and
for their own interests.
And of course, they don't frame it like...
No, they're very much aware of the whole propaganda and everything. So they frame everything as freedom, this and that, and we need more rights.
This is the problem with liberalism. Like, everything gets... taken into the abstract, like they will say, like these Turkish guys will say, like, well, the Netherlands is for everyone, and the Netherlands has to be inclusive, and even though they cater to a very specific minority, and they know they can get votes from that specific minority, and they will push in the interest of that minority, but at the same time they say, like, all inclusivity it is just a means to dismantle our national identity, our national character, and it is so obvious.
They're just using us. We're fools.
Yeah.
I mean, most people are fools. They just don't understand that there's like almost every other group, they operate on their ethnic group interest based on that. Not everyone does that, but most do that, right? And they go in, and as you said, they just use this mechanism that we have in the West right now to gain more power, to gain more traction, to gain more influence, because it's always like, my race, my shit. You know, it's always me, right?
Yeah.
And then while they're talking about, well, we have to think about everyone and we have to accept everyone. But they don't do that themselves, you know. And so the liberal mind is just too stupid and naive to realize that these people are just on a power trip and we're allowing them to be on it instead of shutting them down and say, you know what, if you like Turkey so much or your issues, you have a country full of your people and there's no multiculturalism there, go back there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. But I can understand this argument right now because you know that the ethnic minorities are still relatively small. Overall, I think it's already too much. But in any case, if you position yourself as a leftist or someone with a more liberal mindset, like you see very few relatively ethnic minorities still right now. You still have a dominant Dutch country, but look like 30 years ahead, look 50 years ahead, and suddenly the whole picture changes, and then all these arguments will fall flat on their face. Like suddenly these ethnic realities will become a force that is unstoppable, and then all your fantasies about universal values that they will all collapse like a house of cards.
Yeah.
And
you can already see it happening with this election because of all these parties that are advocating for their own interests. It's just, like you said, it's just a matter of time before they get so much traction that they'll be explicitly advocating for their own interests instead of framing it in the liberal fairy tales.
and also this note, guys, quickly here. I mean, let's talk about the population numbers for a little bit. 16.8 million as of 2013 in Holland, in the Netherlands. A lot of those, of course, are also non-Dutch people. But, I mean,
yes.
Turkey, 75 million people, right? And we call these people a minority. Morocco, that's a big ethnic group in Holland. They're 33 million. What is it? Indonesian, I guess it's quite a bit, too. What is their population? 250 million. I mean, come on. Who is the minority?
It's insane.
Yes. But then those liberals who cannot think of this, of people having their own country and that they can have a home there, and they cannot see this. They accuse us of being very provincial, these are very dumb people and they're from the countryside and they cannot understand the world. But at the very same time, they cannot see these kinds of facts.
No.
And, it just boggles my mind every time.
Yeah, we're always called close-minded. Well, they're the ones that can't look further. Like, they can't think outside of their own box.
Exactly. Outside of their own country. They just see...
Yeah.
They just see this. Maybe some of these people are being held out of society or something, right? It's always something like that. They're being...
Yeah, the argument...
Denied.
The argument they always bring up is that the minorities can't get jobs because people hiring them are racist and
right.
All these kind of things. And then,
Well, let's go to Turkey. Let's go to Morocco. Let's go to Indonesia and then push for our interests there, right? We need more people on the television. We need more of our people to be influential in politics and in business and, you know, media and all these kinds of things. It just doesn't happen, there's talking about global issues all the time and thinking globally, right? But they not. They just think, as you said, Michael, within their own perimeters of what they happen to see in their own world. Like the world is just revolving around them and their little issues, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Very much so. It revolves around them as an individual and the tales, like the fairy tales they know about. We have
cosmopolitan interests.
Yeah, right. But they don't actually think about what's best for the other people. They don't ask the other people, like, what do you want or what are your interests? Because if you would be really honest, then probably the best solution is to give everybody their own country so they can do whatever they want over there.
Yeah, then there won't be all of this horrible racism and discrimination and these issues.
Instead of putting everybody together and forcing them to all work together, that's never going to happen. Never going to work. I mean,
yeah, absolutely. So how does the media handle this concept of I guess whiteness or being Dutch, right? And it's they've adopted, I should say, a nomenclature and a methodology which is almost more applicable to the American situation than the Dutch one. Tell us more about this.
Well, one of the most striking things you can see is that instead of using the Dutch word for white, which is blank, they actually use the literal like translation from English, which is white is wit. So they talk about the witte man instead of the blanke man or the Dutch people. They use the direct, they directly copy the English, the American media, and they bring with it all the same arguments, and like they even go as far as calling a country like we're a very tolerant country, and they've always had immigrants. So they're maybe not literally saying we're in the country of immigrants, but they're very close to it, same as they do in America. And you also can see sometimes articles about that we should take responsibility for slavery and all these kind of things.
Yeah, they always bring up the colonial past, and I mean, the situation in Holland versus America is very different, obviously. But it's like that they can't see that. It's almost like that international model of perpetual victimhood and slavery has been so successful that they can transpose that on any country that they see fit. They do same in Sweden, actually, which is just absurd. I mean, we hardly had any colonies. I mean, it was non-existent. And yet the same kind of template seems to be applicable. And I think I mentioned this to you guys before, but it's like sometimes they don't address us as a nationalist who's Swedish or a Swedish nationalist, but they actually say, you know, like white nationalist when they talk about people in Sweden. I've seen this in British papers or British journalists that wrote about, you know, us and stuff like that. Very bizarre, I think.
Yeah, they just group everybody together. All European people are the same, and they're all responsible for every little bad thing they ever did. And they don't look at what other people did or why it happened. They have no perspective on anything of that. They just blindly copy the narrative of the American media, and try to shame everybody into accepting their point of view instead of, advocating for their own interest.
Oh boy, yeah, it is amazing, absolutely amazing. All right, so we have it next Wednesday. We talked about some of the polls. It seems very unpredictable. Is there anything about the other, like, election process that people should be aware of? I mean, you guys obviously vote on the same day. Results should be coming in the evening. And how quickly usually does things kind of show themselves in terms of trends and whatnot? Is it usually that you find out a day after or the same night in some cases? Do you guys recall the last election, how things went then?
Usually it is known the same night, at least the general trends. Not so much the exact outcome. It can still differ with like one or two seats sometimes. But those are minor issues. But the general picture will be clear in the middle of the night, like at about 1, maybe 2 o'clock at most.
Great. And you guys, obviously, have a place. We're going to be doing some election coverage. Is there anything that I guess the audience should know about that? That seems pretty exciting. You guys have pulled together a lot of good people that will they'll be together and watching as the night unfolds, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, and we still have spots for more people. So if the people are interested, they can contact us, and then we can. There will be some vetting, so we make sure that you're good people, and but then you can join us. And we'll be there, I think, till 12.
Yes, 12.
Yeah,
somewhere in Utrecht.
All right.
Yeah, somewhere in Utrecht.
Right. And it'll be. Let me see here. Yeah, you guys have still the site up and running. Obviously, erkinbrand.nl. There'll be some more information. Yep. Can people contact you through the site?
Yeah, there's a form on the site to contact us. And also, it'd be nice to note that we have a guest. Wednesday, Millennial Woes.
Awesome. Yeah, he'll be helping us to host a little bit also.
Yeah, yeah. So that's very nice. And we'll be talking about the politics and be talking about the results when they come in and these kind of things. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. So what do you guys predict? What's going to happen? I mean, let's talk about some scenarios here a little bit. Is there any other party than Wilders that's pushing for a revaluation of the EU membership, for example?
Yes, I'm very favorable to the Forum for Democracy from Thierry Baudet. He is a well-known Eurosceptic. Like we talked about a little bit about him helping the setting up the referendum about Ukraine, for example. Like, nothing against Ukraine, by the way, but this was more about the EU in a sense. And I think that's a very likely prospect that he will get into parliaments, maybe with two or three seats. It's not much, but I like him. He's a social conservative. Sometimes he's a bit too liberal, but generally he understands that there are quite some issues these days. He even talked about the ethnic displacement, like that there's basically too many immigrants right now. So he knows what is going on, even though he probably can't really express himself fully in public. It seems pretty clear that he knows what is going on. Yeah,
I also like that he campaigns also with trying to break the cartel of parties we have, because although they are all different parties, they always end up doing kind of the same thing. So, and they all keep each other, they help each other staying alive, so to say. So he says we have to break this sort of monopoly they have, and he wants to introduce more direct democracy so people can vote on the issues themselves instead of that leaving it to the politicians all the time,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think, is kind of nice way of breaking or like changing the political landscape.
Yeah, he also wants no more political appointments. Basically, everything has to be decided by a vote from the public. That's more or less the way he tries to subvert the current political system by taking all that power away from them. If he succeeds, obviously. But at the very least, he makes people aware that there is this structure that. That incorporates the major parties, whether they're Labour, whether they're the Christian Democrats, whether they're classical liberals, they're more or less in the end the same. They always govern together. They always appoint members of their own parties on very important posts throughout the country, throughout our institutions. So, and just by him continually spreading this message, more people will become aware of how real power is divided, basically, in our country. And I think that's a good thing.
So what has been some of the more pressing issues this election so far? I mean, what does the politicians bring up generally? What does the media bring up generally?
Of course, there's a lot of discussion about immigration.
Oh, there is?
Yeah, from the Geert Wilders office and also for the Democracy. All the left parties are, of course, saying that that's not a problem. And they're more like especially the green left is pretty big, so they're more for environmental issues and acceptance and, these kind of things.
So they want open borders while they're concerned about the environment.
Yeah. That's exactly what I say, like they want to save nature with the immigrants.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, let's talk about that for a moment. I mean, it is a smaller country. It is the times I've been through it, in it, flying over it, and all those kinds of things. I'm amazed at how damn populated the country is. There's too many people, and it's farms everywhere. Am I wrong?
No, you're not.
No, you're right. Like, I think over 90% of our country is cultivated in some way. So either farmland or urbanized or whatever.
Is there any big, like, national forests?
No.
No, not really. We have area in the middle of the country, but it's cultivated.
There are some forests, but most of the time there are compared to other countries, they're tiny and they're not natural.
Oh, man.
They're planted. Also, it has to do with a lot of the country is polders. So there used to be lakes or sea. So obviously there are no natural forests there. But also because a lot of the land is cultivated either by farmland or other means like cities and villages and these kind of things.
Yeah, I mean, one of the obviously one of the traditions, if you will, has been the canal systems and the way that you know, you've been able to actually cultivate the land in the way that you have because of the fact that it was a very fertile, you know, soil and whatnot. So this is, you know, your landscape, if you will, has been developed by the Dutch people over a very long time. So it's a special charm to it. I'm not saying that, but I'm just talking about this aspect of like further development is not a very good idea, I think, for the Netherlands.
No, exactly. I also don't like the crowdedness in the cities and.
It will only become worse, boss. They already have plans of this, that they want to create this super metropole, like combine The Hague and Rotterdam. And,
really?
I know. Yeah. It's really bad. Yeah. It already, like, the village I used to live in, or town more, I think since I left there, in a year, I think 5 years or so, it almost doubled in size. And you see these kind of things more, in other places as well. They build huge,
It's like apartments and stuff like that that's going up.
And also houses, but then they're all the same, and usually they choose some ugly style.
New modern ugly architecture, right?
You think communism was bad, but
some people say like the communist blocks, they're very boring and concrete buildings they had in the communist era. If you look at the West, we also have them because we have many flats.
I call them soul crushers or gulags.
These
apartment complexes, they're just
There's no soul anymore.
No.
Yeah.
They should have kept the old style. I mean, that's what everyone loves, let's face it. The old style, that's what people come to see when they go to Holland. You know, they want to see Amsterdam down by the canals and these beautiful old, buildings. And I mean, I know that there's an economic issue and we can't and all these things and money. But it's just, I don't know, it's just, what is it worth, right, to just expand civilization in this way and import people in this way and have them live in these conditions,
It's very unhealthy to focus always on growth, I think.
Yes.
Because obviously that's never going to last. And it's also the same with the economy. Everybody always says, oh, we have to grow the economy. I'm like, why do you have to grow the economy? I mean, you can just keep it level at what it is, right? That's not a problem. That's only a problem if you keep in bringing in more people because that means there's less money for everyone. But if you don't grow the population, there's no need to grow the economy as well.
Yeah, they're obsessed with constant growth.
So you can ask yourself, like, who is benefiting from the growth? Because I'm not.
Yep. Of course.
true. I'll make the echo for you.
Do some hand rubbing over there.
Exactly.
It's very strange that they've walked away from this natural way of doing things. Someone actually pointed out too that. Was actually after the Black Plague swept through Europe that opened up for the Renaissance period, that it was actually a depopulation of sorts, if you will. Well, it was disease. I mean, that's what it was. It was ruthless and it was horrible. I'm not saying anything else, but I'm just saying that sometimes ups and down in those numbers, population numbers, can actually be very healthy because everything in nature looks that way. It's not nothing. Have a perpetual, endless, constant growth upward, and in one way, I see it that if you don't begin to act naturally on those levels, sooner or later, there's going to be a drop. It's going to find a way of knocking us back, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also already happening, of course, with the birth. There's not many. A lot of people get children late, or they don't get children at all. So. In a way, there also there's some population, like the population is shrinking in that way, but we're compensating.
Yeah, the economic system is basically exhausting us, rather than the other way around.
Yeah, exactly. They're compensating really by importing other people, which is very weird.
Yeah. Do they get employment, though? How is the job situation? In Sweden, is this very difficult because we have a high educated population? I would assume it's very much the same. So when we try to bring these people in, very few actually dare to take the step of employing many of these people. So they remained unemployed for the majority of their life in some cases.
Yeah, that happens. Yeah, there's many places where the Moroccan minorities, they have these cafes where the people go because they don't have a job. So they sit in the cafe all day. And there's that certain population, like the Somalian or Somalian is, of course, the worst. I think 80% or so of them are without a job.
Yeah.
But a lot of them, I wouldn't say they don't want to work, but many of them, they don't get hired, or they don't because they don't have the qualifications, or they don't speak the language, or whatever reason, they think it's good enough to get the money from the government, and they work something on the side.
Can you imagine? I mean, they come from a country that never had a structure like that. You just get free money. I mean, come on, it's that's why many of them line up to go to Northern European countries.
Yeah, I also heard people complain when with the many migrants coming in, they said, oh, they put them in our street in this house, and they gave them 6 or 10,000 euros, something like that, to decorate their home. And they still have curtains hanging or sheets hanging as curtains for the windows, and they didn't buy anything.
Yeah.
So these people were very pissed off. I can understand. They have a hard time living there, and they don't get any, they get some minimal stuff from the government to get by, but that's it. And they don't get the money to decorate their home or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So. I can definitely understand the people, that the immigrants that come here, that think like, wow, this is easy, and then they're not very motivated to pick up some job or go to school or whatever.
No, and they're also not obviously invested in any way in the country. It's not like, you know what, I feel bad or exploiting the system or something like that. That doesn't exist. They're just thinking of their own interest and their own very egotistical, drives. And unfortunately, this is driving wedges between people. I'm starting to see, though, that these parallel societies that are developing within European countries is, in the short term, it's very difficult and it's, not good, so to speak. But in the long term, I actually think that it's good. I don't know what you guys view this, but many of the parties that we have in Europe right now, they're pushing, they want these people to integrate. They want them to become part of
it's
society.
It's also in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
They want the more moderate parties. If they propose some solution, it's always more integration. And I think that's the worst thing you can do, because then you're destroying both people,
exactly.
Both cultures.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I'm very happy when people segregate by themselves, because then at least our culture is conserved, or the people are conserved, and we don't mix, and it's much easier also for them to go back home, and they're less invested in the country. So, I'm fine, for example, with the solution of giving them some money to go to get back to home, to their own country, and start up their own life over there. Because we can't provide for them here. They're not our people, so
no,
there's nothing for them here.
No, I mean, they came in very fast. They can also go back very fast. It's just what it is. And if they don't, if they don't feel that they're at home, there's a reason for that, because they aren't at home. Many of them don't flee, war and strife. They flee bad economic situations. But I think it's egotistical of them. I think that these people should stay in their country and fight to make their country better. If they have the drive to leave, or even in some cases risk their lives. It's like, all right, why don't you put that energy into making your own country great again, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
We're making it great, I guess. Not again.
There's also an interesting case. There's a popular TV show with kids that can sing, Voice Kit. I'm not sure that was the one.
Yeah,
anyway,
Voice
there
Kit
was this the immigrant, one immigrant that boy who was very good at singing, and there was like everybody was sad because he lost his dad. Apparently.
They died
or something.
They pushed him as the Syrian refugee.
And then it turned out that his dad was still in I'm not even sure he was in Syria, maybe in another country nearby.
Yeah, I think it was Armenia, but he was alive. And
he was in some other neighboring country, and he was alive, and the whole family was fine. And it was very embarrassing.
They've also been living in Lebanon for a couple of years before. He wasn't a refugee at all.
No.
That's just it. These kind of things will happen more often, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely. Exactly. All right, so let's see. What else is there, guys, that we should kind of cover about the elections? I don't know if there's any other predictions, if you will, or trends that you guys are watching. Is there anything that's of concern that we haven't touched on so far?
I think we've had most of it, really. I think the most important thing to remember still is for your listeners is that the situation is still very volatile. The foreign media has been very interested in Wilders because it was polling very high. It was polling like 40 seats. But he has dropped like considerably to about 25, I think it is. So really, anything can still happen. We're about a week away now at this point. And given the situation in our country, it is up to the one who performs the best in this last week. Make no mistakes, just push your own agenda very hard, and that way Wilders can still win. And in that way, force his matches through. Otherwise, I don't see very much happening, to be honest.
Let's talk a little bit more. Spend a few more minutes on this. What would Wilders do if he gets into a position where he, again, I don't know if he would end up in a position where his party would hold much of the most of the seats, the majority of the seats, but what would he do? What could he possibly begin to change in the country?
He's campaigning for leaving the EU, or at least having a referendum so people can vote to get out of the EU and go back to the guilder as well, the Dutch currency. And he wants to close the borders, and he's also for re-immigration, so getting the people back to their own countries. So these are all good things. But like Michael said before, there's a problem because we have the Senate, which is also has to approve the laws that get passed, and they're not on his side. So I'm not sure how much he will be able to accomplish, especially if he has to cooperate with other parties. He will have to make compromises. So it will be very interesting to see if he does get into the government, what kind of compromises you will make.
Yeah. All right, very good. Then we have a little bit of a better view of what we can expect next Wednesday. We know a little bit more about some of the parties running, and we can talk, we'll break more of this down, obviously, when we hit the live show throughout the evening, and have a different kind of portions and stuff like that. So this will be fun. It'll be interesting. But yeah, guys, give us the website here as a closing issue, and if there's anything else you'd like to leave the audience with, whether that's something you're going to be doing during the live coverage, or if there's anything else in terms of, I guess, are you accepting members? Do you want to have more people involved? I would reckon. So how do people reach you guys?
Please visit us at www.erkenbrand.nl. That is www.erkenbrand.nl. We occasionally write articles and organize meetups, usually every month a meetup. Basically we want to create a network for like-minded people, people.
Yeah, we also have a podcast that we post also on the website, and we also have monthly we go for a walk with some people somewhere in the Netherlands to get in tune with nature, I'd say.
Yeah.
And talk a bit about things. So that's very nice. And we
the most important thing is to get off the internet. Meet people in real life, build connections.
Make friends. Make friends.
Yes.
And so we can help each other out when the time gets rough or whatever. We're always looking for new people, especially if you have some skills to help us out to write articles and make videos or organize something. Like, for example, the walks, you can also decide to organize in your own neighborhoods. We try to get people in contact with each other, in touch with each other, so they can, like, you can freely talk about the issues to someone else instead of hanging around online, which is always nice to talk to actual people.
Absolutely.
So I very much encourage people to contact us if they're interested.
All right. Very good, gentlemen. Thank you so much. That's great. We'll have the link up on the website, too. So, yeah, so stay tuned, folks. Next Wednesday, then, we'll do the live show. We'll cover it live. Tune in, and we'll get you more updates and more details about that time. So thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. We'll see you guys soon. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me.